finally when the public inquiry report is published, although we don't have a date for that. Justice is very difficult. There has still not been a single arrest for the perpetrators of the fire at Grenfell Tower that killed 72 people. But as survivors and bereaved, we are determined that we don't want people to be treated the same way that we are. So we campaign for changes to the law around people who live in about the way that people who live in social housing are treated. It's very frustrating. It's very frustrating that almost 7 years after Grenfell, some of the recommendations that were made in the first phase of the public inquiry have still not been enacted by the government. And, you know, we're coming up now to the phase two and those recommendations. But there's a, you know, there's a mistrust of government in that if they can't implement phase one recommendations, what faith will we have that, they'll be able to implement phase two recommendations?
Ed Daffarn, survivor who's portrayed in the play Grenfell in the words of survivors, and playwright Gillian Slovo, South African-born. The play runs through Sunday, May 12th at St. Anne's Warehouse in Brooklyn, New York. It's performed by London's National Theatre. And this interesting fact, today is the 30th anniversary of the inauguration of South African President Nelson Mandela. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
With the Humane Society of the United States, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
The flowers are blooming, the birds are singing, and KBOO's spring membership drive is back. If you enjoy alternative radio that pushes the status quo, then support KBOO by becoming a member today. Donate online at bit.ly/KBOO or text KBOO to 44321 between now and May 25th and support Avant Garde Airways.
Tune into KBOO on Friday, May 10th, from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. for the live broadcast of the Blues Carnival, Rhythm in Rio. Rhythm in Rio is a benefit show for healthcare for all Oregon, featuring Norman Sylvester and Bloco Alegria. Again, that's the Blues Carnival, Rhythm in Rio, broadcasting live from the Aladdin Theater from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. For more information, check out KBOO.fm/Blues Carnival 2024.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this spring membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News, one of the Portland police-backed ballot initiatives is declared unconstitutional.
A second former Multnomah County Animal Shelter volunteer sues the county over animal mistreatment.
And in international news, a rare solar storm tonight and this weekend could scramble power and communication, but also bring the northern lights further south.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 10th, 2024. KBOO is currently in our spring membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to bit.ly/KBOO. I'm Ezra.
And I'm Josh Salem. A former Multnomah County Animal Services volunteer is suing the county. Annie Bedrosian alleges she was punished for raising concerns about the shelter's conditions, as well as their policies around euthanasia and adoption. This is the second lawsuit filed this year by a former volunteer, and both of the plaintiffs say they were retaliated against. Ellen Kessler, the attorney representing the volunteers, told OPB, quote, "The volunteers at the animal shelter are scared. They know that if they speak out, the county intends to punish them," end quote. Bedrosian was terminated in February and wants to be reinstated as a volunteer. She handled the shelter's laundry, often picking up extra shifts and volunteering for extended hours. Court records say the shelter was desperately understaffed and that Bedrosian cleaned bedding that was soiled and left in kennels for days or weeks before being replaced. Bedrosian told county staffers about her concerns, but the lawsuit states that she was warned twice by volunteer coordinator Colleen O'Toole to, quote, "stop asking questions," end quote. She was told that conversations about adoption and euthanasia are staff topics that she was not allowed to participate in. Bedrosian's case comes more than 4 months after another former volunteer, Monica Klein, filed a lawsuit alleging the county terminated her after posting on social media about her concerns over the shelter's decision to euthanize a dog. That case is ongoing. A spokesman for the county said in an email that the county does not comment on active litigation.
Teachers and support staff at Gresham High School voted no confidence in their principal and in Gresham Barlow School District's central administration on April 30th. 64 staff members voted, with 97% saying they want new leadership in the building and the district. They raised concerns about safety at the high school and say Principal Erica Whitlock has been, quote, "largely absent and unwilling to set boundaries." Gresham High School teacher Mark Adamski testified to the Gresham Barlow School Board on May 1st.
Gresham High School administration is largely absent and does not hold students accountable for negative behaviors, does not address safety concerns, does not maintain consistent school-wide expectations, and does not provide clear consequences or transparent communication. Gresham High School educators have repeatedly requested the administration to set needed boundaries, support our efforts to teach students, and establish a safe and structured learning environment. Hallways are often crowded with dozens or hundreds of students skipping class without consequence. Students are increasingly bringing weapons to class, not to attack other students, but as a defensive measure against other students with weapons. The level of violence in our school continues to swell and expand, and the fights include really brutal the past 2 years as the administration sits idle. We are now left with no other option than to publicly express no confidence in our Gresham High School administration or in the district central office administration. The text of no confidence vote taken last week, approved overwhelmingly by numbers, reads, "The certified and classified staff members of Gresham High School express no confidence in the Gresham High School administration and no confidence in the central office administration for failing to acknowledge realities and to support our staff and students. Issues within building admin control include, one, lack of implementation of consistent school-wide expectations and clear consequences. Two, decreased safety for students and staff. Issues within district admin control include, one, high incentives for building admin to hide problems, leading to district admin ignorant of school-level realities and suppressed data. Two, wrongly assuring the school board that Gresham High School is fine and safe for students. Gresham High School staff urged the school board to stand up for our students and appoint new leadership who will be a team member with the community and collaborating actions as well as words. Staff also urged the school board to demand district office administration engage with reality about the struggles in their building."
That was Gresham High School teacher Mark Adamski testifying before the school board about the no confidence vote educators in the building took in regards to their principal and district administration. After the school board meeting, the Gresham Barlow School Board released a statement writing about their school superintendent, James Hue. It reads in part, quote, "We affirm our confidence in the superintendent to urgently and effectively address student behavior and discipline concerns at Gresham High School and across the district, and commit to supporting him with effective policy and resources required to establish and maintain the safe teaching and learning environments that our students, staff, and community deserve," end quote. The district added that they will be reaching out to staff union leadership to discuss their safety concerns.
Yesterday, a Multnomah County Circuit Court blocked the Portland Police Union's attempt to put a measure on the November 2024 ballot increasing the number of Portland police officers. The American Civil Liberties Union of Oregon previously filed a lawsuit back in March to stop the measure from appearing on the ballot. The ballot measure contained three initiatives. First, to increase the amount of sworn officers. Second, to create a 24-hour drop-off alcohol and drug detox treatment center. Third, to increase street response services and include more social workers alongside firefighters and police to, quote, reduce violence and connect people with services, end quote. The judge ruled it violates Oregon law because a ballot measure can only contain one subject. The ACLU filing argued, quote, public health institutions and police workforce are separate subjects, end quote, and went on to argue that it conflates two unrelated issues, behavioral health and policing. Circuit Judge Catherine Vonterstige agreed and ruled the measure unconstitutional.
The ACLU also filed to challenge a second ballot initiative backed by Portland Police Association, or the PPA. The pending lawsuit challenges a ballot initiative that seeks to overhaul function and disciplinary powers of Portland's future police oversight board, established following the police murder of George Floyd in 2020. The PPA seeks to remove disciplinary power from the proposed 33-person board to instead give disciplinary power to the Portland Police Chief. The ballot initiative reads, quote, the chief of police shall have final and sole authority to impose discipline against Portland Police Bureau sworn employees, end quote. Backers say they want the initiative to help increase Portland's police force and retention. In its original vision, the board was supposed to include a diverse makeup. Members should be from varying backgrounds, and it should include those who've dealt with mental illness, substance abuse, and racism. The original iteration of the PAC, or Police Accountability Committee, also excluded any potential member who was former or present law enforcement or an immediate relative of any current law enforcement officer. The ballot initiative instead reworded this as being from, quote, various professional backgrounds and from different geographic areas within the city, end quote. It would also allow current law enforcement to serve on the board. It requires 40,000 signatures to appear on the November 2024 ballot.
President Biden says the U.S. won't arm Israel for a Rafah attack, drawing harsh criticism from Republicans. A judge denies former President Trump's request to modify a gag order. And new data outline priorities for rural voters in 10 battleground states. With more on these stories, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
You're saying Hamas has put Palestinians in the crosshairs of Israel, so stand Israel down? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my friggin' life.
South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham condemns President Joe Biden's decision to withhold weapons from Israel over concerns about Rafah. Republicans accuse Biden of giving in to progressives. Democrat Chris Coons says he told Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that while he understands the desire to attack Hamas, civilians have to be protected.
You have to provide a pathway for civilians to leave Rafah before you go in at scale with a bombing campaign, a ground campaign.
Others argue the idea of eliminating Hamas is unrealistic. And Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders says Biden risks losing the election over it.
Biden is not a perfect candidate. I have very strong disagreements with him over Gaza. I'm glad to see he's making some good movements forward.
Former President Donald Trump's appealing what he calls an unconstitutional gag order in his hush money trial. Judge Juan Merchan has refused to loosen the gag, saying Trump could try to intimidate porn star Stormy Daniels, who just testified Trump paid her to hide a sexual encounter. Florida Republican Senator Rick Scott repeats a Trump argument that the White House is behind the case.
It's a crime in this country to use the court system to go after your political opponents. What's happening in this courtroom is clearly criminal.
In fact, the case is being brought by the Manhattan DA, not the Department of Justice. Some in Mississippi still want to restore voting rights for people with criminal records after a bipartisan bill failed to get a vote in the state Senate. Democratic State Representative Otis Anthony says folks re-entering society should be able to fully participate in civic life.
These are human beings who have families. These are people who have been convicted, they've been incarcerated, they've paid their debt to society.
Opponents argue those who break laws shouldn't be allowed to influence their making. 1 in 10 Mississippians can't vote because of a prior felony conviction. A new poll shows likely rural voters in 10 battleground states are up for grabs. Researcher Patrick Toomey says they're what he calls economic populists, supportive of programs like Medicare and Social Security, but against the government interfering in issues like abortion.
Rural voters are opposed to abortion bans. They have nuanced views around abortion itself, but 3/4 either support it or don't want the government interfering in something that should be left up to women and their doctors.
Finally, actress Cheryl Lee Ralph is arguing that if Planned Parenthood's taken away, some communities would be all but denied adequate health care.
They've got to understand that they don't go to these clinics just because they've been a bad girl or a naughty lady. You go to clinics like this because you need health care.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to a spring membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $60,000 by May 25th. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership online or become a member at any time during this program at bit.ly/KBOO. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, it's Civic Cipher. From 8 to 11, tune in for KBOO's live broadcast of the Rhythm and Rio Blues Carnival at the Aladdin Theater. Tonight's weather will be clear with a low of 53 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be warm and sunny with a high of 84. Today in history, in 1994, Nelson Mandela is inaugurated as South Africa's first black president. The quote of the day is Irish musician and U2 frontman Bono, born this day in 1960. He said, quote, "The world is more malleable than you think, and it's waiting for you to hammer it into shape."
A native-run community development financial institution in South Dakota is helping historically underserved people start their own business. With that story and more, it's Jill Freitas with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas, filling in for Antonia Gonzalez. Opening a business can be a challenge, even for the most privileged of people. One operation in Rapid City, South Dakota, wants to help level the playing field for people from all backgrounds. SDPB CJ Keene checks in.
The Black Hills Community Loan Fund is a native CDFI, or Community Development Financial Institution, aiming to help provide financial opportunities to the historically underserved native community. Barbara Schmidt is the executive director. She says real change comes to communities when economic development is put into local hands.
We recently had a market study done on the Hassapa region, and it showed the definite need for loan products as well as technical assistance to assist individuals pursue business opportunities, starting up businesses, expanding their businesses. And by us providing those technical assistance and loan products to the individuals, they're able to increase their quality of life.
Schmidt says native-owned businesses can take advantage of the tourism and arts markets in Rapid City, but the challenge often comes in establishing the groundwork, and that's where the Community Loan Fund steps in. However, there are some requirements for people looking to get involved with the program.
We provide financial literacy training on an as-needed basis, and we're trying to get a schedule twice a month. They're 6-hour courses. We start from business 101. We do the banking, setting up a budget, everything that individuals will need to further their life. Financial literacy is key. It is also a requirement for any of our loans that we provide.
Statistics from the U.S. Small Business Administration Deputy Administrator Dilwar Saeed show of the 33 million small businesses with employees nationwide, only 48,000 are native-owned. For National Native News, I'm CJ Keene in Rapid City.
The Burt Lake Band of Ottawa and Chippewa Indians have preserved the tribe's history in northern Michigan with a new book. Interlochen Public Radio's Michael Livingston was shown around what used to be Indian Village and spoke with the tribe's historian who helped compile the book, A Cloud Over the Land.
On the top of a hill overlooking an icy Burt Lake, Ken Parkey walks through a small cemetery filled with a few dozen white crosses. He scans the land, looking for signs of an old settlement.
I was always told it was down in that area, right down in there? Yeah, about where that little valley is, kind of back over that way. That's where I was told where it was at.
Several of Parkey's ancestors are buried here. Some lived in the original settlement that stood here more than a century ago. Then came October 15th, 1900, when a group of men, including a sheriff and a land speculator, burned the village down with kerosene. The book, A Cloud Over the Land, tells the story about how the Burt Lake Band lost that land, but also about the fight to get it back. Even now, the band is trying to obtain federal reaffirmation, which would return the label of sovereign nation to the Northwest Peninsula on Burt Lake. Tribal historian Deborah Richman says she hopes the book will remind the region and the country that the band still remains.
Only now when we can tell our story and when people can hear our story are we allowed to start healing. We would like to focus on the good parts of our culture, but there's this just big piece. It very much is a cloud over our families and over our history because we want to right the wrongs that happened to our ancestors.
A Cloud Over the Land is available to purchase on the Burt Lake Band website. Richman says the book has already sold over 500 copies. For National Native News, I'm Michael Livingston.
The Federal Trade Commission voted to ban nearly all non-compete employment agreements in the U.S. last month. Non-compete clauses prevent employees from joining rival companies or starting businesses of their own. The FTC estimated that nearly one in five workers in the U.S. were bound by non-competes, from low-wage earners to high-paid executives. They added that by removing the clauses from employment contracts, the new policy could lead to a roughly $300 billion increase in wages for workers. Alexander Hurdle Fernandez is a professor at Columbia University and a former Labor Department official in the Biden administration. He pointed out that low-income workers don't really have the ability to negotiate over these agreements. He said, quote, "When they get their job offer, it's really a take it or leave it as a whole," end quote. The ban doesn't affect workers at nonprofit institutions. It also leaves out certain existing non-compete clauses for private sector senior executives on the basis that those clauses were negotiated. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce announced immediately that it would sue to block the rule. They claim that non-competes allow employers to guard trade secrets and have more incentive to invest in workforce training for their employees. Other groups are expected to challenge the ban in court, too. The ban will take effect later this year.
The California Fish and Game Commission just uplisted the Mojave Desert tortoise from threatened to endangered under state law. As Suzanne Potter reports, conservation groups hope this spurs more action to protect these majestic reptiles.
Groups that fight to recover endangered species are praising the California Fish and Game Commission's decision to change the Mojave Desert tortoise from threatened to endangered under state law. One study estimates the normally long-lived species has declined quickly in recent years, losing around 155,000 adult animals from 2004 to 2014. Jeff Ardall with Defenders of Wildlife says California's state reptile is on a fast track to extinction.
There are so few left that tortoises are going to start experiencing very difficult situations in trying to find mates. And so because of that, the trend is going to keep going down until ultimately there's no longer any tortoises left.
The biggest threats are development, military base expansion and training, livestock grazing, and off-highway vehicle use. Wildlife managers have recorded dozens of animals crushed by OHVs in recent years, especially in critical habitat from Ridgecrest down to Barstow, north up to Fort Irwin, and east to the state line. California draws 2 million off-road vehicle enthusiasts each year. Ardall says a coalition of groups, including Defenders of Wildlife, sued in 2021 to force the Bureau of Land Management to redo its management plan and better protect the Mojave Desert tortoise.
There should be some closures during the spring when most tortoises are above ground foraging and mating, and then greatly reducing the miles of routes that intersect with critical habitat.
Land managers fenced off one especially sensitive area around 1980. Since then, the Mojave Desert tortoise population there rose to be 6 times higher than neighboring areas that are used for off-roading. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
A rare solar storm starting tonight and into this weekend could produce northern lights in the U.S. and disrupt power and communications. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, issued a severe geomagnetic storm warning this afternoon. Earlier this week, a large cluster of sunspots produced, quote, several moderate to strong solar flares. Solar flares are bursts of radiation, some of the solar system's largest explosive events. Right now, NOAA scientists are calling it a G4 level storm out of a scale of 5. They say that means a, quote, major disturbance in Earth's magnetic field, end quote. They say it's important that the public is aware that the radiation from the solar storm could disrupt GPS, power, and communications. This is the first storm watch warning of this magnitude since 2005. A more extreme geomagnetic storm in 2003 took out power in Sweden and damaged power transformers in South Africa. The storm could create northern lights, or aurora borealis, as far south as Northern California and Alabama. Experts say it'll likely look like splashes of green and that a phone camera might better be able to capture it than the naked eye.
This weekend includes Mother's Day, and in honor of the holiday, there's a puzzle for you to ponder. For more, we go to Pearl Stark from KPOV Bend with The Point Puzzle, a weekly radio game challenging listeners through words and logic.
It's time for the puzzle.
Last week, I asked you to take a five-letter word and repeat it. Insert a filler word in the first copy, and phonetically, you now have a two-word phrase for something you might find at the movies. Well, the answer is sound. Double it and insert to get surround sound. Our winner this week is Molly Spees, who listens to KPOV in Bend, Oregon.
She says,
this week, we've got a Mother's Day puzzle. Start with a famous dog, insert a mother, and you get something you might be planting now. So again, start with a famous dog, insert a mother, and you get something you might be planting. When you have the answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday. This has been Pearl Stark with your Point Puzzle for the week of May 6th. The Point Puzzle is produced at KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
Shady trees aren't just a nice respite when you're out for a walk on a sunny day. Urban areas with trees can be as much as 15 degrees Fahrenheit cooler than areas with less foliage. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. If you go to a city park on a hot summer day, you might sit under a big shady tree to cool off. But that tree is helping you beat the heat even when you're not standing directly under it. One study found that on very hot days, greener areas of Baltimore and Washington, D.C. can be more than 15 degrees cooler than areas of those same cities with fewer trees. And research from the nonprofit American Forests has found similar patterns in cities as diverse as Las Vegas, Minneapolis, Denver, and Atlanta. One reason for this dramatic difference in temperatures is that dark-colored roads and rooftops get scorchingly hot when the sun shines down on them. Then those surfaces release the heat they've absorbed back into the surrounding air. By shading streets and buildings, trees help keep those surfaces from getting so warm. They also help cool the air around them by taking water out of the ground and releasing it through their leaves as water vapor, a process called transpiration. So shade trees are a pretty cool way to fight urban heat. And by planting them in areas with little tree cover, cities can help ensure that all residents can find relief as the climate warms. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to a spring membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 10th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Chris Gow, myself, Josh Salem, and my co-anchor, Ezra. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Suzanne Potter, Pearl Stark, Alex Gonzalez, Jill Freitas, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Ezra. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. KBOO is currently in our spring membership drive, so now is a great time to join. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to bit.ly/KBOO or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
The flowers are blooming, the birds are singing, and KBOO's spring membership drive is back. If you enjoy alternative radio that pushes the status quo, then support KBOO by becoming a member today. Donate online at bit.ly/KBOO or text KBOO to 44321 between now and May 25th and support Avant Garde Airwaves.